Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
I think plus minus kind of tell you a lot.
Curry steps back.
The plus minus statistic.
It's a stat that tells the truth.
Are you a believer in that statistic?
You tell me. I know it's good to be a plus.
It's Warriors plus minus.
Plus minus.
Welcome to Warriors plus minus. It is late night in the Bay. Anthony Slater, it's even later for him. He's in Houston.
I'd even say it's early.
It's early at this point. Huh? You're at the Toyota Center. After the crushing NBA Cup quarterfinal loss to the Rockets, snapping the Warriors' streak of 15 straight wins over Houston. Slater, Steve looked very upset, and they looked kind of a mess down the stretch. Give me a sense of how it felt after the game in the locker room. What was the vibe?
It was like they were really pissed off about this officiating mistake. Which, you know, look, they had this reminded me a little bit, well, actually a lot of Denver, which was at this point, what, like a week ago, the cup game that if they won, they would have won their group and this would have been at home tonight, but they lose in Denver because they go scoreless down the stretch of that game. Right. Then they were probably going to lose anyways, but remember Christian Braun like dove for the rebound and tried to call a timeout. And the officials didn't give it to him, Denver didn't have a timeout, and the officials basically ignored the fact that he was trying to call a timeout and didn't do a technical foul, which would have cracked the door open for the Warriors. They probably would have lost anyways, but it would have at least opened the door. Tonight, very similar. They collapse on the stretch. They go scoreless. In the final few minutes, they blow a 6-point lead in the final 76 seconds, but it's punctuated by this officiating mistake, which tonight, they could more credibly say this completely cost them the game because there was 3.5 seconds left and they were up one. And, you know, as Steve Kerr said, they should have just given Houston the timeout on this loose ball, but instead they called a loose ball foul, which, you know, the point that I know a lot of people in the Warriors locker room were making post game was there was an initial loose ball after the Steph Curry miss that Gary Payton jumps on. That Fred VanVleet
did dive on him a bit.
Lands on him, yeah. And like there were people in the locker room like, that's fine. Don't call that one. Game's on the line. Don't call that in a scramble mode, which again, another point they were making was like, this was one of the most physical, loosely called games we've all seen this season. There was only 19 total free throws. People were getting hammered all game with no whistle, which again, they're like, yeah, it's fine. But then don't call the, you know, ticky-tack loose ball foul on Jonathan Kuminga, then 3 seconds later 80 feet from the hoop to gift Jalen Green 2 free throws to win the game. That's what the conversation was, and they were extremely mad about it. I can understand, because it did seem like a strange decision by Billy Kennedy. But also there's a lot of issues to discuss about why the Warriors were even in that situation.
I feel it though. Listen, they stunk it up, right? Like they earned that loss, but that's an awful call to make. I mean, just terrible in the spirit of basketball. You can't come in out of nowhere. There's bodies everywhere. There's limbs flying, and you come out of nowhere and just say foul. Like, what? Like, that was just out of all the things, he just picked one foul. And the craziest part, that wasn't even a foul. Like, it wasn't a foul. It wasn't like this blatant thing where he slapped him in the face. He literally reaches over his shoulder and gets a hand on the ball. And Billy Kennedy said he pulled his shoulder, but that didn't happen.
I mean, look, he's just trying to. You know, you can always, as players
once
say,
once you blow the whistle, you can say anything.
Yeah. Yeah, especially in those type of situations. You'd be like, yeah, some contact there, whatever. I mean, the reason you know that it was a surprising call to so many in the building is, like, you could tell the Rockets thought they were just getting a timeout. And by the way, they were, like, pumped about that, right? They got the ball in a loose ball scramble. There's 3.5 seconds left. Okay, you know, they got it. Jalen Green's trying to call timeout. Ime Udoka was definitely trying to call timeout. Like, if Billy Kennedy had just come in and said, timeout Rockets, they would have, like, hustled to their huddle, been like, yeah, great job. You know, like, they were not even asking for a foul. But
speaking of timeouts, did the Warriors say they tried to call a timeout when Gary Payton had the ball?
No, Gary blamed himself. Again, we need to get to some of these mistakes that the Warriors made, including, I thought the worst of it all was Steph Curry. Taking the shot when he took the shot, but Gary blamed himself.
We can talk about that. I have a thought about that, but yeah, I feel it just like felt like Gary power. Calls a timeout.
He didn't. He. I mean, at least he says he didn't. He just said that.
No, I didn't say he did. I'm saying in that moment he's got to call the timeout.
Oh, like, for
he's
sure.
Got enough control to literally pass the ball, or somebody from the bench has to say timeout.
For sure. Or, you know, what he said was he could have just sat there and sat on the ball, and then they eventually come over and either wrap him up to foul or jump ball. Like, worst case, they grab it and jump ball him, which, you know, in retrospect, they would have loved a jump ball, right? But, yeah, they screwed up. They you know, and again, like, it was an odd decision by Billy Kennedy, but those happen over the course of a season. Again, I know, like, there's absolutely like zero conspiratorial belief that this was like, the truth is, like, wouldn't you think the NBA would have wanted Steph Curry in Vegas?
The NBA wanted the Warriors in the NBA Cup. No
question about it. So, but again, like, it's an officiating mistake that makes them so they're 14-10 instead of 15-9. They lose a game to a conference competitor. Like, it's an important loss considering how congested the West standings are. It's an important loss if you care at all about the cup. And Steph Curry post game, it would very genuinely upset that they weren't going to Vegas. He really did want that stage. I could make the argument that this is actually much better for them in the regular season. The fact that they're instead of
Billy Kennedy did him a favor.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, they're about to go home and get 3 days off and then play the Mavericks on Sunday at home instead of going to the circus in Vegas, maybe being part of an 11-day road trip and facing a red-hot Thunder team, you know, on Saturday night on a showcase stage. But I don't think it has that many, like, it's really not that big of a deal. And the call is the call. Like, it's just an odd situation that presents itself in sports. The problem is the way they continue to screw up down the stretch of games and lose games they should win.
I don't know if it's screwing up as much as it is a blatant sign of the flaws that they have as a team. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I think it's both, but I agree. I think they're making mistakes.
They're screwing up because they're being put in a position they should not be in. Like, for instance, like, you know, Draymond's running a point and they're trying to do this whole, you know, two go at Steph, Kuminga cut. And in that situation, Draymond probably shouldn't throw the ball, and Kuminga certainly shouldn't be trying to draw a foul in that situation. But Kuminga's not been in the situation before. He doesn't know. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't have the composure to do it. To me, it's just like, this shouldn't be the offense at the end of a game. It should be, give me the ball. I got this. Everybody calm down. Like, Steph not milking the clock so there's no or little time left, all right, is a direct, I think, a direct result of how hard Houston was playing, how much they blanketed him, and he got a step back and finally got a clean look and was going for a dagger. Like, should he be doing it? No. Hold the ball, milk the clock, and force your way inside. I mean, obviously, he probably didn't think he would get a call, but to me, these are all symptoms. These mistakes are symptoms of a larger problem. I mean, two shot clock violations?
I know, that's bad. Did you see Steph's postgame?
No.
Interview? I mean, he kind of like, you know, he blamed himself for missing some of the shots and some of the late game issues. But, he basically said if they can't solve some of these scoreless drops, that'll just be a mediocre team. I thought he was pretty forceful in his comments, and he at least alluded to the idea of, like, they, you know, run simpler sets. I don't know. Let me see if I can pull it up quick. The pattern of scoreless droughts down the stretch has to be addressed, or else we'll be a mediocre team. He kind of took responsibility. Then he says, but I think we can all address certain sets that can get us into better shot creation type opportunities, knowing how teams are trying to guard us, especially in the last 5 minutes. We're talking about it. We're experimenting. That'll be the defining point of our entire season, if we figure it out or if we don't, because we're playing well enough to win most games. Yeah, I mean, like, I think he probably thinks there should be more just like simple pick and roll action.
Simple, yes. I mean,
and he's probably right, but and I want to get to that aspect of it, but I do want to push back on the idea that he made any type of justifiable choice to shoot when he did, because he didn't. Because Ime Udoka, I thought, made a coaching mistake where there's a 3.2 second differential, 27. I think it was like 27.2 when Sengun hits the layup to cut it to one. And I figured Ime Udoka was going to foul. He doesn't. If Steph Curry literally just bleeds it all the way down to 4 seconds left and flings up a rainbow shot that hit, all you got to do is graze rim, game's over, pretty much.
Yeah, so he's got to milk the clock there. He's got
to. He just has to. That was a really bad choice by him. But again, wider scope, the issue is the issue. And to me, that's not a last 30-second thing. It's what you're talking about. It's the last 5 minutes of the game.
To me, they had two shot clock violations because they couldn't get a shot off, and a turnover, and Steph had a hard time getting free from the Rockets' aggressive defense. I mean, overplaying the passing lanes, all of that stuff. He's playing off the ball. I think he finally got a clean look and was trying to take it and wanted to night-night.
He wanted a night-night at Dylan Brooks' face, let's be honest.
Absolutely. You know?
I don't think it was as much about what the offense could or couldn't do. I think it was just like,
I think he got a clean look finally. And it's like, I'm not passing this up. Like, I got a clean look.
Can you imagine when I'm putting the pillow right next to Dylan Brooks' head?
I mean, he's already done. He's done the whole, remember the screaming hold the face thing? He did that in Houston last year against Dylan. He's had his time against Dylan Brooks. I don't think he's right. I think he's much more worried about, we got to get a shot off. And if it presents itself at that time, I just think in his mind, he's got to be thinking, hold the ball, milk it, and at the last second, like, get somehow inside. But like the two shot clock violations, like the small line, the purpose of the small lineup, what's the word they kept talking about? Getting organized, knowing what they want to do. They look so disorganized. And the difficulty they have is if there's any team that's good at ball pressure, it destroys their offense. That's really all you have to do. You got to pressure them, overplay the passing lanes, and it becomes really hard. And the only other option that you feel good with the ball is probably Podziemski, but he's not doing anything with it. So it's really a tough spot. Like, it's, and fortunately for them, not every team has like 4 or 5 of those guys, right? I mean, they got Jabari, they got Dylan Brooks, they got Tari Eason. I mean, Jalen Green, if he ever decides to just deny the ball, is going to be problematic. I mean, the only person, you know, you probably think you don't have to worry about is Sengun, but, you know, not every team has that, and Houston is unique that way. But whenever they face a team like this, That's going to be the difficulty until they get somebody, which is why you hear Dennis Schroeder's name at a time where for a franchise that I can't think of a time they would have wanted Dennis Schroeder on his team before. But it's just kind of that.
We talked about it. It's a lack of what Jordan Poole was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, having that anymore. And, you know, I see some
Wiggins would help in this situation.
Oh, the way Wiggins has played this season, they've really missed him the last couple of games. Even today, I thought in like kind of those like second unit portions of the game, you missed like a Moses Moody. Like, not that you don't know for sure he would like, you know, help in a 6 minute stint, but you know, he has those games where it's like, oh, wow, Moses Moody has 10 points and, you know, 7 minutes. You know,
I got to say, Lindy Waters hooped tonight.
He missed some shots, and then he made.
But he made some. Yeah, he played pretty good defense, though. He made a couple mistakes where it was like, all right, get him out the game. But I don't know. I felt like
he's like storyline number 27 coming out of this one. But
now, look, the other part was. I mean, Draymond was so incredible defensively, right? And he's going to get Shangoon. Like, he's going to need these days off.
I mean, well, they're ever going to play one game in the next like 7 days. So
yeah, so he's gonna need these games off. But it's tough. The moment they put Looney in,
Looney was fine. I think Looney played that last possession really soft because they were up three and it was almost like a give up two situation. But it did seem a little weird when you're sitting there going like, you know, Draymond has just stoned Sengun on like 9 straight possessions and completely frustrated him. And then it's like, oh, they put Looney in to guard him and it's like right to the rim for a layup. But again, I think they were basically at that point telling them it's fine to give up two because then they're probably going to foul on the other end, but then Houston doesn't foul. But then you don't take advantage of Houston not fouling again. I just think that was a big mistake by Steph. But
yeah, he's just got to hold the rock. He's got to hold the rock. The other part that I think they need to just get down really clear is who's handling the ball at the end of the game. Like, it can't be hopping around. I mean, I'm not saying it should be one person, but it can't be four people. You know what I'm saying? Like, they've got to get clear. Like, who's going to have the ball? Now, I understand why it can't always be Steph, but to me, this is where, like, it's got to be, like, Kuminga.
There's been some really good signs from Kuminga. Look, they beat Houston last week without Steph and Draymond, and how did they close that game? Very similar situation, and Kuminga like got a high screen, split a double team, beat Dylan Brooks to the rim. I would like to see him. I mean, they're doing more pick and roll type actions. I thought they really targeted Sengun in the second half tonight with some of that stuff.
They did very well with that.
But they got to be a little bit more relentless with it. I think we all agree. When and if they get this theoretical second star or even like a Dennis Schroeder type, we will reassess. But until then, like, give Kuminga a bunch of these reps.
They also need composure. They just make a lot of weird mistakes at the end of games. I mean, for a team that has played a lot of these games, I mean, they make a lot of mistakes.
For 3 years
now. Yeah, it's wild.
And it came kind of out of nowhere. I remember there was they blew like a 4-point lead in Charlotte. This would have been 2 seasons ago. They blew a 4-point lead in Charlotte, and it was like the second time they had done it in like 3 games. And I remember asking Draymond about it post game, and he's like, "This is something we never did. We never gave up 2 possession leads in the final minute." And I remember that night going and looking at it, and it was, I don't remember the exact stat, but it was something like over the previous 6 years of the dynasty, they'd only given up a two possession, 4 point or more lead in the final minute, like twice in like 6 seasons or something like this. And it was like, oh wow, now they've done it 2 times in 3 games. But that's only led to a trend where they've done it repeatedly over the last several years.
Yeah.
We can name like 6 last year, right? Remember the cup game against Sacramento that we were at? That was a bad one. Remember at the Clippers a couple nights later, Oklahoma City a few times, the Chet Holmgren stuff. like they continue to make really bad mistakes late. And sometimes it's the veterans.
Draymond's in it too. Absolutely. Yeah.
But you know tonight,
here's what I knew they were going to lose this game. They're up six. And like Draymond gets a stop, but Houston gets the ball back in the
inbound. I know the play you're talking about.
And I mean, I don't know. I know Fred VanVleet. I've been watching Fred VanVleet for a long time. I'm sure they know Fred VanVleet. Why is Podziemski going under the screen?
Yeah, that was kind of like a topic post
game. I was like, I knew that's game right there. That's game. You give Fred VanVleet, who literally has a championship from torching the Warriors. Why are you going under a screen?
Yeah.
Why is Gary Payton not calling a timeout? Why is Steph taking the shot? Why is Draymond trying to get
thread the needle?
Yeah, like it's wild that they just can make so many a series of these. Like, what are you doing? But once Podziemski went under that screen and Fred VanVleet made that three, I'm like, yeah, they're gonna lose this game. They're gonna do the thing it takes to lose the game.
Yeah, and that was like Podziemski going under the screen was definitely like a topic, you know, post game. And then, you know, you saw Buddy Hield was all fired up. But Buddy Hield was just fired up about 9 different things. But him and Podziemski were really kind of chirping at each other a lot tonight. But I don't know.
You mean it was a topic post game?
Just people were, you know, like the locker room was like discussing the various plays, mostly discussing the Billy Kennedy call and non call on the VanVleet land on Payton. But like, I definitely, like, there was some talk about like not, you shouldn't go under on VanVleet. But like you said, you just named like 4 other mistakes. So it's very team wide.
It's what Steve, remember how Steve used to always talk about like, you can't like cheat the game and that whole kind of like karma or karmic concept of playing the right way and it produces the right results. To me, that call from Billy Kennedy is that. Terrible call. Just ridiculous. Like, Billy Kennedy, what are you doing? But when you make the mistakes they make down the street, like, that's what he's talking about. Like, you just don't get to do this type of stuff and have the gods work out for you. And you're,
yeah, I mean, even tonight, it's like, obviously, if you come out so ferociously against with, you know, the Billy Kennedy call, it's going to be a topic post game. It's going to be half of what I write in my story. It's going to, I'm Sports Center's on one of these TVs in the media room above me, and like they're showing Kerr post game. So like, you're going to make it a topic with, by the way you respond to it post game. But it's also like, you're going to elicit a lot of eye rolls from, you know, people like us or fans or whoever. Cause it's like, yeah, he probably screwed that up, but like, y'all shouldn't have been in the situation. Like,
also, I do think Steve's reaction, though, is part of like, we're probably going to be in the situation more than not. So we do need these breaks and it does matter. Like,
yeah, no, I mean, every little result. This is what, you know, you've talked to people that audited last year's regular season when they won 46 games. They felt they shouldn't have been in the play-in, this and that. One of the topics was how many times they screwed up late last year and how like that made their season look worse than it probably actually was.
Yeah.
And it's kind of replaying and something, you know, they have a better record this, you know, right now 14-10 than they did last year. So they're like out in front of themselves in a sense. But if you replay this year at the end of the year, we might go, hey, this game, this game, this game, and this game, you don't screw up those 4 games. You're the 4 seed. Instead, you're the 8 seed and you're in a play in and that led to this or that. Like, you know, so I agree with you, but also it's like, I couldn't understand why they were so upset tonight, but also I'm like, y'all, you know, a little bit more like look in the mirror. That's all.
And, you know, I actually, to be honest, I thought Houston would win a little bit more comfortably just because you just know the Rockets wanted this game. With all of their being.
Dude, walking around pregame, there's Rockets people talking about how like this was their biggest game in like years.
Yeah, they wanted this, and I wasn't sure how much the Warriors wanted it, and then they went out and scored 37 points in the first half, and it's like, But I mean, they kind of. I felt like they wanted it, which only makes the composure on the back end that much more troubling. Like it was just wild to watch, dude. It's really like it really was just.
It's become less wild for me to watch after the last few years. Because again, here I'll name another one for you. Do you remember Kings game, the Kings Warriors series game 4 in Chase Center when they called the timeout they didn't have?
Yeah.
I mean, that was Chris Webber like.
Chris Webber, yeah.
And that was it was just like it's been a lot of these like odd decisions and turnovers and blunders over the last few years. I'm trying to like there's probably a few more we're not even thinking about. So
I mean,
it's like
their clutch record last year, I mean, the amount of close games they lost, it you know, it's very clear that this is a problem. But in fairness to them, it didn't start that way this year. And no. It almost felt like they figured it out. But I do think that's what I'm saying. I do think these are symptoms of larger issues. Like it doesn't really matter how much you try. If the other team has an advantage, it's probably gonna work out this way.
Yeah, look.
It could be a missed shot or it could be somebody getting stuck in the corner trying to make a cross court pass and Dylan Brooks turning into, you know, prime Deion Sanders picking it off for a fast break layup. Like that's just what it is.
Look, they have offensive issues as you're mentioning that they need to solve. But also to me it's just like the mental errors within all that are just also compounded. Both really.
No question at all. Who you got in the cup, man? You going with Rockets all the way?
Hi, Thunder. I don't know. I was there last night. They look really good.
Man, they look. I was just watching this game and watching that Thunder game. There's no way the Rockets can score enough. Like
you wouldn't think, but the Rockets beat them here like a couple weeks ago, and it was kind of like spirited game. It's gonna be a good game.
Yeah, that's gonna be a tough one. From the rotational aspect, do you think they stay with the small lineup? Like,
no.
When Wiggins get back, do you just plop him in for Peyton?
I think Wiggins starts. I think Looney probably starts. I mean, they told us the idea was Draymond was going to come off the bench. So
yeah,
I think they might even go back to Steph, Pajemski, Wiggins, Kuminga, Looney. We'll see.
Yeah.
It's like
I feel like they need Buddy on the court though. Like it's starting to.
Okay, then start Buddy. Don't start Pajemski.
Yeah.
Have less of kind of playmakers, ball handlers with no Draymond, no Pajemski on the floor. But hey, aren't you giving the ball to Kuminga more?
Yeah, getting him Kuminga. Yeah. And Buddy Hield isn't terrible. He's just only really looking for his.
He's not a point at all.
No, he's not a point at all. Also, odd choice. Pajemski inbounding at the end.
I mean, look, Steve has done this since last year. Remember that curveball pass that he threw to Steph to beat the Suns last year?
Yeah.
It was like one of those ABC Saturday nights. It was one of the more insane like inbound passes you've ever seen.
That was ridiculous, yeah.
And then after that game, Kerr was like, yeah, he's just our best inbounder. I trust him the most.
But he's
like,
been saying that about Kyle Anderson all year now.
Yeah. But I guess my point is like, you know, Pajemski might not be playing like it at times, but like this is still one of like Kerr's trusted hands.
Yeah. I was thinking, was he thinking, you know, the inbounder is the most dangerous player type thing. So you get it in and get it right back and he's going to be
open. Who would you have had inbound it?
I just presumed I would want somebody taller. I think that was part of the problem. He couldn't see the other side of the floor.
No, I think the problem was they sold out to stop Steph. They were able to bottle up.
I mean, somebody
Steph
was open, though.
Yeah, okay, but I'm just saying, I guess what you want, like Buddy Hield taking it out? Because if it gets back to
Kyle Anderson, like.
Oh, then it gets back to Kyle Anderson and he's shooting the three?
It's about the same as. same as Pods at this point. No. Nah, it's just weird. I didn't fully like the ATO. I think they've had some better ones.
It wasn't great, but I don't know. But at that point, they had screwed the game up already.
Yeah, game was cooked. I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. But defensively, I do think they have the chops.
Yeah, it was a great defensive game, better.
Yeah, Houston's not a great offensive team, but defensively, they didn't top 24 in either quarter, in any of the quarters. So
yeah, look, Draymond was excellent defensively down the stretch. And you know they're on a string.
Offensively too, I mean, no, five turnovers, but like he's just taking opportunities to score more than you. So I almost wish he would do it more. Like, you know, like him posting up Fred VanVleet. As long as he's doing it with confidence, he's so much better at it. If he's like, I'm taking this guy. But yeah, you're right. Probably you took him again. Like defensively, they were just really good. They were
look. They're the fourth best defense in the league right now, statistically, and they're a top five defense. That's the problem is they go through these prolonged scoring droughts every game. Now it seems like a lot of times the portion of the game they do that is the last 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I mean, really, in reality, when they don't. It's because Steph is shooting the ball well.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Like, that's the – you want
– Or, you know, like, there's a little bit of a
– Steph shooting the ball well.
Yeah, Wiggins and Kuminga, too. I mean, that's what it's got to be. But
– yeah. Well, you're right, because Denver, Steph didn't shoot the ball well, but they still – they had Kuminga playing well. I don't think Wiggins played that game. Somebody else was playing well. But I think Steph was like 4 for 15 against Denver. Tip, especially without Wiggins, Steph just basically said, needs to say, I need to get 30. Like that's just got to be the goal. You expecting Dallas on Sunday to be emotionally charged, or is that part over with? Because
well, both teams are going to get 3 days off prior, so you know both teams are coming off like disappointing losses. Dallas is healthy. They're playing well. They'd won 8 in a row before or 7 in a row before that game. Luke is back and looking much better than he did. Oh, he didn't play that well in the Cup, but he had been looking much better, at least physically, than he did the last time the Warriors faced the Mavs.
Isn't Dallas getting 4 days, though?
Yeah, you're right. They get an extra day. So, yeah, I expect it to be an energetic, physical game. And I just like, yeah, Clay back in Chase Center, yes, it's not going to have the sailor hats or the pomp and spectacle, and it's kind of on this weird Sunday night where they're just roping games in. Like, I'm not even sure it'll, like, I don't think it'll be national TV because it wasn't a planned game. Clay will end up actually making 3 trips to Chase Center this year, which is kind of interesting.
I'm looking at it says NBA TV game on the schedule.
Yeah, I'm sure NBA TV was like, hey, we'll just pick one of these random games.
We'll take it.
And they're like, whoo, Warriors, Mavericks in San Francisco. We'll take that one.
Exactly right, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice night for NBA TV.
So, yeah, I think, you know, Clay's still going to get a standing ovation because at least half the arena will be people that weren't even there that night. It won't be near what it was that first game, but it should be charged up, and it's kind of a, you know, it's a big game for both teams.
Yeah, it is, I think so, especially for the Warriors. I don't know, let me see what Dallas' schedule is, but the Warriors come out of that game at Memphis, who's playing really well, at Minnesota, who's just always tough in their thing. So, I mean, they kind of need this. So they're looking at coming back home 14-13 and fighting for 500. You know, like this game takes on a little bit of extra magnitude in that sense. You know, you don't want to get kind of back to, you know, you don't want to get into that situation where now you in danger of getting under 500 and squandering the early season start. Whereas the Mavericks get Warriors and then 2 home games against the Clippers and the Blazers. So they got a chance to really kind of separate themselves. I mean, it's a tough stretch for the Warriors. They kind of need this one now, especially considering how it's gone for the last, say, 10 games.
I'm about to go up an elevator and exit out of Toyota Center. So if I get cut off, then I need you to, you know, do your whole solo act and take us out.
We're just gonna go out right now. How about that?
If you can still hear me, that's fine.
But I don't know. Now I'm torn. I was thinking about not going to the NBA Cup and forsaking my assignment.
You know, you could really get on your grind, and you could go to the semifinals Friday in Vegas. You could fly home for Warriors Mavericks, maybe even hit a Niners game. Although I guess, oh yeah, Saturday. You're right. Semifinals Saturday, fly home Sunday morning for Warriors Mavericks, then fly back to Vegas, go to Raiders Falcons on Monday Night Football in Vegas, and then go to the Cup Final on Tuesday. Look at that.
And that's in addition to tomorrow night's NFC West showdown.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Between the Rams and Niners. Yeah, I'm not doing all that, Blair. I'm not making that happen. What was the vibe like in there? It looked kind of rowdy. It looked like old school rowdy Houston.
It was as good as a regular season game it's ever been in Houston. It wasn't full 2017 West Finals Houston type crowd, but it was filled up. It tipped
they
off.
They were shooting like the 0-for-27 night or 27 straight. They were shooting like that at first.
It was tip off was at 8:53 p.m. which was crazy. So it was filled up. Usually, like, Houston's late arriving, but, you know, if you're going to tip at 8:53, it wasn't late arriving. It was loud.
Everybody was lit, huh?
Yeah, I'd say it was like
8:53. You know.
It was a really good regular season crowd. And as you know, like, Houston is not necessarily known for good regular season crowds. So it wasn't over. Like, I was in the Thunder. I was at the Thunder Mavericks game yesterday. That crowd was better.
Well, yeah, Thunder's crowd is traditionally better. Before I let you go, I do want to talk a little bit about the trade options. And obviously the one that's been going up is Jimmy Butler. There's just no, I don't see how it could happen. I just don't see.
I'll just say this.
I don't see them giving up Wiggins for a guy who's 35 and might actually be injured for.
Yeah, and Wiggins would just, from salary matching purposes, have to be in it. Also, Jimmy Butler comes with a complicated contract situation where part of the reason this is happening and part of the reason all this is out is because him and Miami clearly are in a standoff about the extension he wants and that they're unwilling to give. And he has like a $50 million player option for next year. You're just kind of would be handcuffed contractually with him coming over. I'm not saying that it's not something that the Warriors would or wouldn't explore. I will say there's like nothing active right now and they're not discussing it necessarily. This is feels like the first inning of a potentially drawn out process that's mostly between Jimmy Butler and Miami, right?
I mean, that's where we are though in this part of the season, right? It's feeler time, right? To see what's up. Now, and on the court, the fit is great. In many ways, Jimmy's exactly what they need. But
if you went all in for Jimmy, you'd want Andrew Wiggins as part of the ride, right?
Yeah, you would. But and also, like, the worst thing that could happen is you give up your key pieces and then Jimmy is not playing.
Not only that, but walks this summer.
Walk probably wouldn't be the worst thing.
It looks pretty bad if you shed a bunch of your young talent. Yeah. And Wiggins for a guy that walks 4 months later. At least be able to go later. Get
somebody, you know, presumably. Get under. Under they could get with a dude making $60 million on the roster. But
yeah, exactly. So
yeah, it just feels a bit untenable for the Warriors want. I think Dennis Schroeder is something far more realistic.
No doubt. Smaller scale is much more realistic.
I think it's that scale. I don't know about him per se. You go get a. I don't know if a.
No,
a
the rum- 6 foot I'll one just say dude- this: the rumblings on Dennis Schroeder are real for sure.
No, I do think so. And it's actually a bit of a. Well, I mean, it's still all is going to come down to Steve Kerr saying, "I'll play this guy."
The other thing that really matters in this new apron world is Dennis Schroeder's contract actually fits very smoothly with D'Anthony Melton's expiring.
Yep.
And they don't have much wiggle room under this first apron, but the fact that Schroeder and
it's only Melton, like
200, 300. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty big deal.
I just think they can get somebody better if they wait. I just don't know if they can afford to wait.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And in Brooklyn, among the teams that would be more willing to strike early, Brooklyn would be one of them. But we'll see. I'm kind of with
the
you.
The fit is weird. Like, D'Anthony Melton was great because he could play with Steph Curry.
Well, Schroeder could, and he defends. He's just not as big, but he's still, like, he's pesky. Now, he can't guard, like, your bigger scores as well.
So now but, Steph is then. Right?
Like, but the other thing, to me, where the fit's weirder is, like, Schroeder's going to, like, Melton really kind of fit into, like, Steve Kerr's style of offense. Moving, cutting, some secondary playmaking. Whereas Schroeder's, like, you really got to start leaning more and more into the pick and roll.
Yeah, and it's pick like, and roll, ISO. I don't think that's bad, though. I think they need
I don't either, like but, that. Like, will yeah. they do it, you know?
Yeah, that's the other part. Like, there are people in the organization who like it, but the grand question is, at some point, Steve Kerr is going to have to talk to this guy, and he's going to be like, how am I playing? And Steve is, you know, will probably say, I don't know if I... I don't know. I can't guarantee you minutes. Like, that's really what it... That's the quandary. I actually am kind of with Steve Kerr on this. I don't know if that's a great fit, but the skill set he has is exactly what they need. Somebody who could literally just go get a bucket. If you leave him open in space while you're face guarding Steph, Dennis Schroeder will cook you.
And he does, and he's not like a complete negative on the other end. He actually does some pretty useful defensive stuff. He's small, but he's like really like a kind of a little pit bull defensively.
Cam Thomas or Cam Johnson? Who would you rather?
Cam Johnson is like your traditional 3-and-D, like big wing that can shoot it. But I don't necessarily see that as a fit. I see that more as a fit in Sacramento.
Yeah, I'm of the mind. Just go get Keegan Murray and it's all good.
Well, all right. What you giving up for Keegan Murray? Kuminga?
You know, I might do that.
Actually. That would be an interesting like
actually might
gamble trade by both sides. But no, that ain't happening. Let me put that out there right now. That's not happening.
Definitely not happening. I mean, you know, DeMar would have been great if not for the whole money element. Yeah. To me, it's gonna be somebody along that $12 to $15 million range where you can maybe put Melton and another piece together. Like that to me, that's what's gonna be more realistic, unless they just wait. But again, these games matter if you're trying to wait. Can you get to February 3 games under .500 and then find a player to save you? Like, that's a tougher thing. If you get to February and you still comfortably a few games above .500, still on pace for 50 wins, you know, you can be a little bit more patient. So these games are going to matter. Like, it's a big deal because it really is going to determine the desperation. Because if you do a deal now and you get, you know, Dennis Schroeder, and then 2 months later somebody else becomes available, it would have been great. Like, that's the type of stuff that really...
I mean, you could always reflip, but, you know, it depends on how many assets you necessarily send out the door with.
Send out to get them, yeah. So that's going to be tough. These games are just pivotal. They're huge. The Warriors are 14-10, right? They need to get to Christmas in a place where... You know, they just can't get too close to 500. That's just how I'm seeing it. Getting too close to 500 is going to be a problem. But what is it, like, almost 3 o'clock your time?
2:40 a.m.
2:40. Thanks for being a gangster, man. For riding.
Well, I'm about to get about 3 days off. So.
Yeah, you are chilling. Get home for Sunday. I don't think I'm going to see you Sunday. I think I'm going to be...
Nah, you got to be in Vegas, right?
Yeah. I mean, I could come up with something to be sick.
Yeah.
That Hawks-Bucks matchup I can't miss.
There you go. Hey, you know, what you need to do is go promote some of the young teams in this league. There's a lot of fun talent and fun things happening, and instead of moaning about the lack of the, you know, big name brands, go cover some fun young talent.
Yeah, I'm just kind of going where the people who pay me tell me to go. So, all right, thanks for tuning in to Warriors Plus Minus. We'll be back on in a few days to give you what you need. on your beloved Golden State Warriors. Anthony Slater is going to sleep, hopefully, as am I.
Might just be going straight to the airport. Who knows?